Northrop Grumman builds a deep space radar capability array for the AUKUS powers, Australia, the United Kingdom, and the United States, that can be used for directed energy weapons into Earth orbit and deep space. The New York Times emphasizes the UFO mystery in a new article, which is a bellwether for how the deep state wants us to think about UFOs. The Lucifer entity has been tracked back in history to the Anunnaki warrior Marduk. Forbidden archaeology shows that the human presence on Earth goes back hundreds of millions of years. Australia, Britain, and the United States conduct Exercise Red Flag Nellis 24. Are they preparing for an alien invasion? The U.S. House Oversight Committee members describe what they learned in a classified briefing by the Inspector General for the Intelligence Community. Alien love bite. Extraterrestrials have been manipulating relationships among human abductees for decades. The Pentagon relaxes classification rules for special access programs for nations that are part of the Combined Space Operations Initiative. Joint Japan-Australia corporate venture to destroy space junk using laser fusion power is an indicator for what classified programs have been doing for decades. All this and more in the Exopolitics Today Week in Review.
You're listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala, your source for the uncensored truth regarding the human, extraterrestrial, global, and political agenda. Click the like button and subscribe to this channel. And now, here's Dr. Michael Sala.
Welcome to the January 20 edition of the Exopolitics Today Week in Review. This is my second week in review from my new location here in the beautiful, balmy Key West area in the Miami, in the Florida Keys. So very much in an adjustment period, but you will be getting the latest week in reviews and new interviews and webinars all being shot out of this new Key West location. So I look forward to bringing you all of that for the rest of 2024. So I want to begin the week in review by looking at some of the stories so we can go to my Twitter feed. And here we have a story that concerns how Australia, the United Kingdom, and the United States, they have been given or they have begun using this new radar, this advanced radar capability, DARC system that was developed by the Northrop Grumman Corporation. And this is a surveillance system that can penetrate beyond Earth orbit into deep space. Now, what are the capabilities of this system? Now, ostensibly, it's a tracking system, surveillance. But what this might be a cover for, almost certainly, is that this is something that can be used not only for tracking and surveillance, but also for targeting and shooting down advanced spacecraft in Earth orbit or in deep space in the area near the cislunar region, which is the region between the moon and the Earth. So this is all space territory that ostensibly is controlled by the Earth or facilities on the moon, secret facilities on the moon. But we know that these directed energy weapon systems have been developed and secretly used for decades in classified programs. We know this because there is film footage. So let's take a look at this video of the Space Shuttle STS-48 mission, which was in 1991. And what we're going to see is a UFO, which is traveling in one direction, and then that UFO makes a 90-degree turn as it evades a directed energy weapon. So here's the UFO here. You can just see it here. Hopefully you can see my cursor circling around the UFO. And it is moving towards the top left of the screen. And now you'll see a bright flash. And now it makes a 90-degree turn. And there it is, a directed energy weapon. And some experts analyzing this video tracked that directed energy weapon to Pine Gap in Australia. So that was in 1991. So I believe what's happening is that this dark system that's being developed for the AUKUS is really a cover program. And I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of this, that as these classified programs are declassified or kind of white-worlded, in other words, they now begin to be used in kind of like open source literature, you're going to have a lot of these new weapon systems supposedly coming online. Corporations like Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, they're going to announce these new weapon systems, new space-capable technologies that really have been used because they were developed 30, 40 years ago, but now they are wanting to roll these out into the public domain because they are wanting to make a lot of these space technologies something that can be shared amongst allies more easily, and I'll be talking about that very soon. Okay, so the New York Times, here's another story. The New York Times is a bellwether for what the deep state wants the American population to think and act. So here you have an article from the New York Times, and it is, okay, it's behind a paywall. I actually am a member, so, I won't go there. I won't bother logging in. But UFOs remain a mystery to lawmakers after a classified briefing. So what the New York Times is doing is that it is starting to cover the UFO issue in a serious way. It's getting its writers to come up with stories, and it's describing UFOs as a mystery, as a puzzle, as an enigma, but saying that they are a genuine national security issue. So that fits the current deep state narrative, which is to define UFOs as an unknown phenomenon with multiple explanations and potential threat. Now, that's how the deep state wants us to think about UFOs, that you know, they're unknown, they're a mystery, an enigma, they're possibly interdimensional, we have no idea what they do, you know, they have all these bizarre behaviors, sometimes they look like jellyfish, sometimes they look like some kind of chandelier, or sometimes they look like flying saucers. We just don't know what they are, but in fact, they do know that the large majority of these cases are in fact spacecraft from extraterrestrial civilizations that have been visiting our planet for decades in large motherships and releasing these smaller craft that come into our atmosphere and make contact or are shot at and sometimes shot down. So this is what is known, but of course, as the deep state wants to move forward with its own agenda in how and what to reveal, they want to portray the UFO issue as this unknown puzzle when people who have been read in know very well that these are extraterrestrial spacecraft. Doesn't mean that they're all extraterrestrial spacecraft. Some of them might be coming from the inner Earth. Some of them may be genuinely arriving from portals and interdimensional. And some of them may well be these kind of transmorphic entities, you know, these kind of odd jellyfish shapes. But by far the majority, especially the ones that have been shot down, have been described by witnesses as typically flying saucer-shaped craft. Okay, so here is a webinar that I highly recommend that Elena Danan did on the secret story of Lucifer. And what I appreciated about her presentation of the Lucifer entity is her scholarship, that she is, it's always worth reminding the viewer that Elena is a former professional French archaeologist that served in Egypt on various archaeological expeditions in preserving ancient artworks. So she's very familiar with ancient history. And she knows about the ancient historical references to this Lucifer entity in different traditions. And so she, in her presentation, she tracked that entity down to ancient Sumerian and biblical texts. And what she thought was very significant in the Lucifer story is that Lucifer rebelled against his father in the kind of biblical tradition that most watching this probably are familiar with. Lucifer was the rebel. He rebelled against his father, whatever you called that entity. She tracks that story down to the relationship between Ea, or Enki, and his son Marduk, because Marduk actually rebelled against Ea, or Enki. And that's very significant because in terms of the biblical traditions, you have a match between the relationship between Marduk and his father, Ea. The same relationship appears between Lucifer and his father, God, or whatever name you want to give to that entity. So here we have a rebellion, and Marduk rebelled because of his uncle Enlil playing the role of the trickster. So she asserts that in Judaism, Satan is a servant of Yahweh, and that kind of is another match, that in the biblical tradition or in the Judaic tradition, Satan is used for the Lucifer term, and Satan is described as a servant of Yahweh. And Yahweh, according to Elena Danan's research, is none other than Enlil, or his actual Anunnaki name is Yu. So this kind of matches with the description of Marduk in the Sumerian records, that he rebelled against his father, Ea, and worked with his uncle, Enlil. And in the biblical traditions, you have that relationship between Satan and Enlil, Satan and Yahweh, that Satan is a servant. But in the Christian biblical texts, Satan is described as the great adversary. He's the one that's trying to tempt Yeshua, or Jesus, trying to tempt him with power and corrupt him. So Satan is described as the great adversary, as he is in the Quranic texts. So the Quran also has a kind of Satan or Lucifer figure appearing in it, and he is also described as the great adversary. So what this shows is that these key biblical characters across different religious traditions are based on actual Anunnaki entities who, for hundreds of thousands of years, if we go back, say, 300,000 years, which presumably is when humans, or at least one branch of the human family, was created by the Anunnaki, that the Anunnaki played a role in terms of different Anunnaki personages becoming these key historical figures in biblical traditions, whether we're talking about Yahweh, whether we're talking about Lucifer, Satan, and so forth. So a fascinating webinar. I learned a lot from it, so hopefully you can watch it. I mean, it is available on Crowdcast. The link is there, And for all links, just to remind you again, you could always just go to my Twitter feed. So here's a story about Michael Cremo. It's actually an interview I did with Michael Cremo, who is the author of the best-selling Forbidden Archaeology that came out in the mid-1990s, and it was created quite a sensation at the time, because here you had someone who was definitely well-read, a scholar, who looked at the evidence that the human presence on Earth goes back hundreds of millions of years, that there have been many different civilizations that have risen and fallen on Earth. And that's a key point to keep in mind. We think of Atlantis and we think of Lemuria and we think of Mu, and we also think of an area in Northern Europe, Hyperborea, and that's about as far back as it goes, that, you know, those are the civilizations. And we could kind of estimate that those civilizations, that they collapsed, maybe some of those collapsed at, say, 13,000, 11,000 years ago during the Great Flood, which has been dated, or it's estimated that around 9,600 BC is when you had the Great Flood as an Earth-wide event. So these civilizations like Atlantis collapsed at that time. Before that, it was Lemuria. So we go back maybe 20, 30,000 years for Lemuria and Hyperborea to have been flourishing. But Cremo is saying hundreds of millions of years. He's found evidence for that. So that shows, and I think it's a very important point to keep in mind, that according to Sumerian records, the Anunnaki upgraded the early hominids on Earth, and they upgraded these early hominids to create Homo sapiens. And that happened around 300,000 years ago. Now, if Cremo is correct and the evidence supports his contention, then the human presence goes back a lot further than that. So there were civilizations that rose and fall, up until the time of the Anunnaki arrival. So the Anunnaki probably arrived at one of those nadirs, one of those low points in human civilization after a great catastrophe, and humanity was rebounding from the last great catastrophe. So it meant that the human genetics had already been hybridized or tinkered with by earlier visiting civilizations. And that is something that I think is very important, that the Anunnaki, they came in and they were the last of the genetic tinkerers, if you like. And certainly when we look at books like The Cedars from Elena Danan and other books, The Only Planet of Choice, the main claim is that different extraterrestrial civilizations have been genetically tinkering with humanity going back millions of years. And so that means that the Anunnaki were the last major kind of like extraterrestrial civilization to tinker or manipulate humanity's DNA to create a new body or a new template for the Anunnaki consciousness to come into the Earth. So I think humans were created, and giants were created as avatars for Anunnaki consciousness. Now I'm going to look at this story here concerning this exercise Red Flag Nellis 24-1, where Australia, the United States and Britain are cooperating in a joint military exercise at Nellis Air Force Base. And it involves a space component and the most advanced aircraft and weapons technologies. Now, this is a very interesting military exercise. And my guess is that because it's taken place at Nellis, which is where you have a number of extraterrestrials like tall whites and grey extraterrestrials, according to Charles Hall. And also, this is adjacent to Area 51 and the S4 facility. I think you can make a reasonable claim that this military exercise is really set up to respond to a hypothetical alien invasion, because you've got different alien groups there. And so this is, I think, probably one of the true rationales behind this exercise, which involves the most advanced space and weapons technologies possessed by the US that is shared and tested with its two major allies now, the United Kingdom and Australia. So very interesting. You can take a look at that report in the Asia Pacific Defense Reporter, where they talk about that particular exercise. Very interesting development. Okay, so here's a coverage of some of the video statements by different members of the House Oversight Committee. So that's one of the committees in the US House of Representatives, and they received a briefing by the Intelligence Community Inspector General. And what you, so you have a video compilation of what these different members of Congress had to say about this. And here are some of the key takeaways from the congressional classified briefing. So, you know, this is the committee that has been most vocal in trying to bring about transparency on the UFO issue. There have been previous classified hearings in the US Senate in the intelligence with the intelligence committee there, but this is the first one involving the UFO issue involving the House Oversight Committee, and that committee is wanting to promote greater transparency on this issue. So what did the congressional representatives have to say about this classified briefing by the inspector general? Excuse me. The government has made a concerted effort to conceal information on UFOs. The government has not answered the substance of David Grush's claims of captured UFOs and the existence of non-human intelligence. Money is being spent on UFO investigations without congressional authority or oversight. The UFO phenomenon information is compartmentalized to prevent its disclosure, and more congressional investigations will be made. So this is really these different members of Congress saying that there is much more to this issue that they want to bring out for the American public. So let's look at some of what these people have to say, what these representatives have to say. Andy Oglers from Tennessee says, I just think that most of the American people fear is truth is that the government has a concerted effort to conceal as much information regarding UAP as possible. Here's Anna Luna, who has also been very prominent in promoting UFO transparency. My one concern is that we are authorizing money that is supposed to be spent on certain programs, and yet there is compartmentalization in which Congress doesn't have access to oversight in those programs. And Tim Burchett, by design, this issue, UAP, is very compartmentalized. Here we have Robert Garcia. I would like to have more hearings. This is a serious topic and it deserves serious attention. So, I mean, that's just a kind of a few of the takeaways from this classified briefing by US Congress members, that they are going to be holding more hearings. They feel that too much of the information is compartmentalized. They want to get their hands on it. And so, you know, this is the start of a process. So here we have the announcement for my next webinar, which is going to be on February 3rd, 2024. And the topic is going to be what's coming in 2024, catastrophic disclosure. And what I am doing in this particular webinar is saying that the effort to control the narrative concerning UFOs, that is running into a lot of problems, that there has been an attempt to come up with a controlled disclosure narrative to kind of slow down the rate and the extent of information released to the general public about UFOs, but that's failing. And I think one of the big reasons why that's failing is not so much that you have the military-industrial complex kind of shooting down key legislation like the UAP Disclosure Act for 2024, which did happen. I think the main reason that this kind of like controlled disclosure narrative is going to fail is that the world population is ready for something, and that the deep state is desperately trying to hold the truth about UFOs back. And I think when we look at the big picture, that the big exopolitical picture of what's happening on the planet, we know that there are many different advanced extraterrestrial civilizations that are monitoring events on the Earth. And what they see is they see a small minority of humanity, the deep state, those that run the political and the financial and the military institutions, they see them as wanting to control this information and not reveal the truth to the world, to the public, whereas they see, they are able to register the consciousness of the rest of humanity. They look at the rest of humanity and say, look, of the people on this planet who are informed about this issue or know about this issue sufficiently to make an informed choice, overwhelmingly, over 90% want the truth, want to know the truth. So that means we are acting in accord with the aspirations of humanity by revealing ourselves, regardless of what the deep state wants and says. So this is a very important point, that, and a deep state knows this. That's why they can't stop what's coming. So they are trying to slow it all down. They're trying to brainwash people into thinking, well, UFOs are a mystery, an enigma. We don't know what they are. But decades of interactions and the truth slowly coming out has made a lot of people aware that we are being visited by different extraterrestrial civilizations using a range of modalities, and that they are monitoring our planet, and they are looking at us and saying, and that they're able to monitor our consciousness, and they, I think, are reaching the conclusion that, yes, humanity is ready. We're going to reveal ourselves, and we're going to start activating advanced technologies like space arts. So I'm going to be talking about all of that and what this means in my next webinar on February 3rd, 2024. So I hope you can join me on Saturday, 2 weeks from today. Okay, so here's a Fox News report that focuses on the UFOs being interdimensional in nature and incredibly hard to understand, and not necessarily from outer space. Most public officials refer to UFOs as unknown, a mystery, or a puzzle. Okay, so this is, again, the same point as what I pointed out earlier with the New York Times article. Here you have the Fox News report pretty much saying the same thing, that these are interdimensional craft. They're very hard to understand. They're not necessarily from outer space. They're unknown. They're a mystery. But again, that contrasts with what thousands of witnesses have revealed, that we're being visited by extraterrestrials in advanced interstellar capable spacecraft that are coming down to Earth and being shot at, and sometimes being shot down. And the craft are being reverse engineered by various corporations in collaboration with these major corporations, the aerospace corporations like Lockheed Martin, Northrop Grumman, and the Boeing corporations. Okay, so here's the title of that article: Close Encounters of a Congressional Kind, Lawmakers Struggle to Grasp Alleged Interdimensional Nature of UFOs. Again, it's the pattern. It's the narrative the deep state wants, which is, we don't know what these are. It's very complex. The experts say they're interdimensional, a mystery and a puzzle. And that's just a load of BS, but you know, that's what the deep state agenda is. Okay, here's a very interesting interview I did with Eve Logan, who has been doing hypnotherapy for decades. I think she began in the 1990s. So Eve Logan, in 1992, so she's been doing this kind of research using hypnotherapy to help experiencers recover their full memories since 1992 when she completed a master's degree in counseling psychology. And she has her own abduction or extraterrestrial encounters when she was a child, when she experienced an abduction experience. And so she's had interactions with different extraterrestrial entities, greys, insectoid, reptilians, and a human-looking race that she calls the primordials, that are like fallen angels or watchers. And she's written two books, and in her two books, The Alien Love Bite, that came out in 2000, and The Dark Side of Cupid, she focuses on how these different extraterrestrials have been manipulating human relationships, that somehow they are trying to manipulate people into mixing their genetics in a way that furthers the genetic program of the greys. So if the greys see two people having the right genetics that are of interest to them for their breeding program, then they can facilitate these two people falling in love with one another and therefore breeding children who are then used in the grey abduction programs. So this is how the greys have been doing their genetic experiments. The military have been cognizant of this, and they've been doing their own abductions, which are called military abductions or MILABs. So Eve Logan has been tracking this since the 1990s. She's worked with some of the pioneers in abduction research, such as Carla Turner and Barbara Bartolik. And she knows of researchers such as Helmut Lammer, who did the first book on MILABs, and that book was very quickly withdrawn from public circulation because in the 1990s, the level of suppression was just orders of magnitude much more tighter and non-tolerant as opposed to today. Today, I mean, we're living in, it's a lot easier for a researcher such as myself to be doing this kind of research. But in the 1990s, researchers were being eliminated. And we know that people who were just doing research, we're not talking experiences, we're not talking whistleblowers, but people who were getting too close to the truth would be eliminated. So that was happening in the 90s. So Eve Logan was a part of that. She did the first interviews with some of the pioneers in the secret space program testimonies. I did my first interview with Randy Kramer, the secret space program whistleblower, who kind of like got me interested in the phenomenon back in 2014. And Eve Logan had interviewed him about 6 years before that. So she definitely has conducted hundreds, if not thousands, of interviews or regressions with people. So definitely worth watching that interview and to learn about this kind of alien love bite phenomenon, which I think is intriguing, how a breeding program by grey insectoid extraterrestrials can manipulate human relationships because they want particular humans falling in love and breeding because they see that as advantageous for their long-term agenda. Okay, here's a very interesting story, and this is breaking defense. So the Department of Defense completely rewrites classification policy for secret space programs. So here you have the Department of Defense working with a number of nations that are combined, that are part of a combined space operations initiative. So here you have the Combined Space Operations Initiative, which includes 10 nations. There were seven, prior to this year, there were seven: Australia, Canada, France, Germany, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States. But more recently, that it was expanded by three more nations, but when Italy, Japan, and Norway joined that. Now, what was decided was that because the classification rules for special access programs were so stringent that when you tried to combine the space military activities of these 10 nations, that there were problems that, for example, you know, if you had Norway participating in this combined space operations initiative, and the Norwegian military that has space functions, they wanted to kind of like participate in a meaningful way with this combined space operations initiative, they would be denied access to a special access program, which was critical to this combined space operations initiative, because the Norwegians didn't have access to this particular SAP. So it was decided by the Pentagon that in order to promote genuine space cooperation among these 10 major nations, that you had to relax classification levels for those countries. So that's what is part of this relaxation of classification rules, and it's part of an international space cooperation strategy. So the real goal of all of this is to create a Starfleet. That's what's really happening here. I discuss it in my 2021 book, Space Force, Our Star Trek Future. And in that book, I describe a critical meeting that occurred in Peterson Air Force Base in 2019 in Colorado, when the predecessor of Space Force, that was at the time it was called U.S. Air Force Space Command, and along with other military services, NASA, and other major nations, they came up with 8 scenarios of what could happen by the year 2060. And the favorite scenario was a Star Trek future. And in the book, I describe what that Star Trek future entailed. And what we are seeing now with the creation of this Combined Space Operations Initiative is the foundation of what will become a future Starfleet. So that is, I think, what is really behind this effort by the Pentagon to bring in more nations to collaborate in this space cooperation initiative that unites the space commands or their kind of functional equivalents in the militaries of these 10 nations. And so that, I think, we're going to hear much more of in the future. Here's a paper that I thought was fascinating that was written by two researchers that are proposing a crypto-terrestrial hypothesis, which is the theory that some, if not many, UFOs or UAPs actually are coming from subterranean regions of Earth or at the bottom of Earth's oceans. So this is a paper. You can download it and read it for free from researchgate.net. And here's the abstract of the paper. I won't try to read that. The text is a little small. Maybe I can increase that. Let's see if I can do that. Okay, maybe a little. Okay. Okay, so what they're trying to do is they're proposing that in addition to UFOs being from outer space or being a misidentified military craft from corporate or secret space programs, that the third explanation is that they come from underground or underwater locations on Earth. So this is the authors speculating about that. They do an excellent literature review of different researchers that describe UFOs deriving from the inner Earth or underwater locations. So, you know, this paper is well worth reading just for the literature review of that. Now, where the paper, I think, falls short is that they focus on prior research, and they speculate that this crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is probably something that is valid, that it's very plausible. Now, what I want to point out is that in my book, U.S. Army Insider Missions 2, I focus on this Army insider who is currently serving in the U.S. Army, JP, and he's been serving since 2019 and he's still active. And he's been taken on multiple missions. And he has been given permission to reveal details of these missions. And so I've been revealing those details on my website, exopolitics.org, and in podcasts where JP gives his updates. And some of those missions have been included in this U.S. Army Insider Missions 2, where he describes being taken to underwater and also underground locations where he's interacted with these different beings. So the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is not just speculation. It's actually a solid witness testimony showing that this is what's happening. And so what is also worth mentioning is that JP has taken photos. People always say, well, where are the photos? Prove this. Where the photos? JP has taken photos, and I've made some of those photos available on exopolitics.org and the book. So you can go to the book and you can read, or you can see some of these photos. So, yeah, I think the crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is a very important one that we, when we're looking at the whole UFO phenomenon, a significant number of them come from the inner Earth or from underwater locations. And JP, and in fact, that is exactly what he is said in some of his updates. He has said that he has been taken to these large underground spaceports that belong to different extraterrestrial civilizations or inner Earth civilizations. And he was told that they are going to be revealing themselves more and more in 2023 and 2024. Well, now we're in 2024, and they are revealing themselves. So this crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is correct, and the paper is well worth taking a look at. Here's an article in the debrief about a joint Japanese-Australian corporate venture to destroy space junk using fusion-powered lasers. And this article on the debrief, it goes into detail about this kind of technology and the different corporations that are involved and how it is going to shoot down space debris. Now, you know, to me, this is just another aspect of this space cooperation or this effort to release some of these classified directed energy weapon technologies that have been used for decades. Earlier on, I mentioned how the STS-48 incident from 1991. These classified directed energy weapon technologies have been around for over three decades now, and they wanted to declassify these, and they wanted to make them part of the conventional military. And so this is what's happening. And so various corporations are being given the green light to move forward and develop these technologies. And what we are seeing now is that what's coming into the public arena is these classified directed energy weapon systems that have for decades created a kind of bubble, a surveillance and targeting bubble around the world, whereby any extraterrestrial spacecraft that came into that security bubble could be shot down. And that has been happening. There have been many cases of extraterrestrial spacecraft shot down by these directed energy weapons. And so now some of these directed energy weapons are being white-worlded. They're being green-lighted for major corporations to develop and come into the public sector. So that's what we're seeing. And so I think this is also part of this Combined Space Operations Initiative, because as they share this technology between the 10 nations that are part of what will be this future Starfleet, they want to set up a planetary surveillance and tracking and targeting grid, so that way any unauthorized spacecraft that enters into this security bubble, which extends beyond Earth orbit, even beyond the cislunar region. The cislunar region is that bubble around the Earth, which extends out to the moon, which is around 250,000 miles out. And possibly even further than that, there is this security bubble where these directed energy weapons can be used. And as we saw in that STS-48 video, these directed energy weapons can travel very quickly from the ground on Earth and target spacecraft. So, yes, I think this is what we are going to be witnessing over the next decade or so. A lot of these classified technologies, whether we're talking about directed energy weapons or whether we're talking about reverse engineered spacecraft, a lot of these are going to be declassified and released, and major corporations are going to build these. Okay, so here's a fun story about this is my office here in Key West. Very happy to have an outdoor office again. I had one in the Big Island of Hawaii. I lived in Hawaii for 17 years, and for much of that time I had an outdoor office, so I really missed that when I moved to Tennessee. And so one of the first things I did moving to Key West was to set up an outdoor office. So that's where I do a lot of my preparation in terms of writing and articles. And so you'll have an idea of the kind of ambience that I'm in as I'm doing my exopolitics research. And I do encourage people to do something like this, you know, because I think this research is challenging. You're dealing with very serious issues, so it's good to be in a very nice environment so that you don't get overwhelmed by the dark aspects of this research. So there are the main kind of stories for the Exopolitics Today, the week in review. I hope you enjoyed it. Again, don't forget to like and share this podcast to overcome the algorithms that limit these podcasts going out into the you know, YouTube sphere or Rumble, wherever you're watching this. And I look forward to bringing you next week's Week in Review. And don't forget, I have a new webinar now. Go and take a look at that. So thank you and aloha.
You have been listening to Exopolitics Today with Dr. Michael Sala. Please remember to like, share, and subscribe to this channel. Join or start a conversation in the comments. Take the time to explore the vast library of best-selling books, webinars, and podcasts by Dr. Sala. Visit exopoliticstoday.com.